This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We talked in our first hour at some length about these new pharmaceutical companies, this Nostrum Pharmaceuticals that just radically raised the price, that took the price of an antibiotic that's essential for urinary tract infections from $500 a bottle to $2,300 a bottle. And the guy just came right out and told the Financial Times, no, it didn't cost us anything more to make. Doesn't cost us anything more to package or ship. It's just profit for me. In fact, his exact quote was, I think it is a moral requirement to make money when you can to sell the product for the highest price. Right. But I think that the you know, that's a scam, right? The bigger scam is the two Santa Claus theory. Oh, and speaking of props, before I get to that, we were talking, people were calling in and talking about their drugs and what they were costing. Sean handed me her albuterol, is it? Inhaler, which used to cost you $10,
yeah.
And now they're $150, and your insurance company pays for all but $70?
$75.
That's insane. I mean, again, you know, a company that's doing it because they can, you know. Can I mention you, sure? One, you know, Shira, who's running our board today, is uses an EpiPen. She got bit by a spider a couple of weeks ago and had to use up her EpiPen. And, you know, now it's like the things are a damn fortune. So this is just, and that's, you know, two out of the four of us here in this, or five of us here in the studio today. It's nuts. Are victims of the drug companies. But anyway, I wanted to get to the two Santa Claus scam that Jude Waninsky proposed in 1977 in the Wall Street Journal. He wrote an op-ed. Now this, keep in mind, you go back into the Wayback Machine. 1977, the Republican Party was in a crisis. 3 years earlier, Richard Nixon had resigned. In 1977, Jimmy Carter had just been inaugurated as President of the United States. He won the election of 76. Jerry Ford had pardoned Nixon, and Jerry Ford had ended the Vietnam War. And all of that looked really bad for Republicans, because Republicans were like gung-ho for Vietnam. And Jerry Ford said, no, that's it. We're retreating. We're giving up. And so the consensus in the Republican Party was that we're toast. We're dead for a generation. What do we do? You know, we got wiped out with Goldwater in 1960. And then you know, Nixon finally got in by committing treason in 68 by cutting a deal with the South Vietnamese to you know, not do the peace talks. And, you know, the Republicans were like, you know, we're screwed. What do we do? And Jude Waninsky came along and he said, I have the solution. I have the answer. And he wrote this, he published this in the Wall Street Journal, and he called it his two Santa Claus theory. And he said, what we have to recognize is that the Democratic Party has, since the era of Franklin Roosevelt, been the party of Santa Claus. They're the party that gives stuff away to people. They gave people Social Security. They gave people the right to unionize. They gave people workplace protections. They gave people clean air and clean water. They gave people Social Security. They gave people Medicare in the 60s. They gave people Medicaid. They gave people long-term unemployment insurance. And the Republican Party has been viewed as the party of Scrooge, because the Republican Party, to every single one of those things, has said no. The Republican Party fought Social Security. They called it socialism. They fought Medicare. They called it socialism. Ronald Reagan famously recorded a recording saying, someday, this was an anti-Medicare, the socialist Medicare program. And he said, someday we'll look back on a time when men were free. Right, because it wasn't socialist. So Jude Waninsky says, Democrats have been viewed as Santa Claus. We have been viewed as Scrooge. We've got to change that. So how do we do that? First of all, the Republican Party has to become the party of Santa Claus itself. We've got to find something that we can be Santa Claus about. And secondly, we've got to force the Democrats to shoot their own Santa Claus, to kill off their own Santa Claus, so that they can no longer claim to be part of the party of Santa Claus. So there's the Democratic Santa Claus and the Republican Santa Claus, thus the two Santa Claus theory. And the Republican Santa Claus should be tax cuts. We should become the party of tax cuts. And this works to our benefit, because as we pass tax cuts, first of all, it'll make very wealthy people very happy with us, and they'll give us more money. But secondly, it will run up the deficits. which is actually a good thing from the Republican point of view, because that means that when Democrats come into office, as they invariably will, these things go in cycles. When Democrats come into office, we yell and scream about the deficit and how it's going to destroy America and it's a debt on your grandchildren and all this kind of stuff. We do that to the point where the Democrats are going, oh, I guess we should cut Social Security and Medicare. You'll remember President Obama even said, well, maybe we should consider a chain CPI. And, you know, a whole bunch of us said, whoa, wait a minute. It was a cut on Social Security. It was a way of slowing down the COLAs, the cost of living adjustments. It damn near worked. And the Republican Party, this was published in 77 when Reagan became president in 1980 after cutting a deal with the Iranians to hang on to the hostages so that Jimmy Carter would look bad. Ronald Reagan commits treason just like Nixon did, and he becomes president in 1981. And what's the first thing they do? Jude Winiski all the way, two Santa Clauses. We are the tax cut Santa Clauses. Largest tax cut in history. A series of them, actually. The top tax rate was 74%. The top corporate rate was nearly 50%. They cut the top tax rate and the capital gains rate down to 25%. And they cut the corporate tax rate. I don't remember the exact number, but they cut it substantially. And what did that do? When Reagan came into office, the national debt was $800 billion, not even $1 trillion. When Reagan left office, the national debt was over $2 trillion, almost $2.4 trillion. It just about tripled the national debt, which was exactly what they wanted. They added another $1 trillion into the national debt with George Herbert Walker Bush's presidency when he tried to raise taxes and then got hugely hurt for it and cut taxes. And so coming into the Bill Clinton presidency, as soon as Bill Clinton becomes president, we now have a national debt of almost $3 trillion. Oh my God, it's going to be a disaster. Bill Clinton has to cut Social Security. He has to cut Medicare. And most importantly, he has to end welfare as we know it. Which Bill Clinton did. The Democrats cut welfare programs. They slowed down the growth of Social Security. They did not raise they did not eliminate the cap. All things that Bill Clinton had campaigned on doing the opposite of. He was going to expand Social Security and Medicare. He was going to strengthen the welfare program so that we actually had a decent social safety net in this country, like they do in Canada, like they do in Europe. So that people don't live in fear. They're not, you know, waking up in the middle of every night wondering if they're going to lose their homes because somebody in their family got sick. Bill Clinton was going to fix that. Instead, no, went the other way. He shot Santa Claus, exactly as Winiski predicted would happen. Because it wasn't just the Republicans, it was the media as well. And now Trump is taking this to virtually an art form. Trump has raised this beyond that. Trump is saying, lying through his teeth, of course. Keep in mind, Paul Ryan has already said he wants to cut Medicare and Social Security. It's called entitlement reform, is the phrase that they use. And Bernie Sanders just came out with this amazing video. And in it, he quotes Trump from his Montana speech. Here's Donald Trump in Montana. Got to turn it up, Shira.
They will destroy your Social Security.
Way up. I can't hear it. Let's start this all over again. Can you? It's got to go a lot higher than that. Maybe, Nate, you can crank your volume. It's up. Okay. Well, I'll just tell you. I'll just read it to you. Last night, Donald Trump says, the Democratic Party is going to hurt your Social Security so badly, and they're killing you on Medicare. Just remember that. I'm going to protect your Social Security. We're going to take care of your Social Security. We're going to take care of your Social Security. Matt Rosendale, this is the Republican candidate in Montana for the House of Representatives, is going to make sure that we're not touching your Social Security and your Medicaid. It's only going one way, and that's stronger. We're going to end up there. The Democrats are going to end up taking it away from you, and you won't even know what happened. And then on Wednesday, he said, the Democrats will destroy Social Security. We're saving Medicare. The Democrats want to destroy Social Security, Medicare. If you look at what they're doing, they're wanting to destroy Medicare, and we will save it. And by the way, there are now a number of Republican candidates who are running deceptive ads, these lying ads. Rod Blum in Iowa, Bruce Poliquin in Maine, Claudia Tenney in New York. These are all Republicans who are running ads saying that the Democrats want to destroy Medicare as we know it by going to Medicare for All. Medicare for All system. Well, I wouldn't destroy Medicare. It would expand it. It wouldn't be the same, that's true. It would be much better. But they're just lying through their teeth about this, and Paul Ryan and the Republicans, I mean, frankly, in the last Republican budget, you had these massive cuts. The White House unveiled its 2019 budget, right? It calls for $1.7 trillion in cuts to social safety net programs, including a 230, now this is Donald Trump and the Republican Party just rolled out their budget for this year, for the coming, you know, the year that starts October 1st, 2019 fiscal year, that includes a $237 billion cut to Medicare. It's amazing how these guys, how Donald Trump can just lie through his teeth, and the press plays it and doesn't push back and doesn't say, oh, no. It's Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell who want to cut Medicare and Social Security. It's the Republican Party who wants to do it. This is Jude Wininsky's two Santa Claus theory on steroids. In fact, Trump has taken it to a place where even Wininsky didn't, he never suggested Republicans lie about it, just that they game the system and force Democrats to do something. This is incredible.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we all need to wake up to it, and we all need to tell our friends about what's going on. And the just gross, crass, blatant lies coming out of the GOP. And welcome back. Let's see here. Tarek in Griffin, California. Hey, Tarek, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on YouTube.
It's actually Griffin, Georgia.
Oh, Griffin, Georgia. Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
I'm calling to get your advice. Recently, D.L. Hughley, who you may know, has been criticizing the black church. And recently, a syndicated radio host, Ricky Smalley, do you know him?
No, I don't. I know of D.L. Hughley. I don't know either of these guys personally, and the second one I've never even heard of.
Well, Ricky Smalley, he's very well known in Atlanta and Georgia. Mm-hmm. And he recently said, quote, on Vlad TV, which is a popular YouTube channel, he told Vlad, quote, I'm really questioning some of the Bible stories, and I think some of that stuff in the Bible is set up to train black people to be submissive to systematic racism and white supremacy. He said that I believe. And I'm wondering, do you think that there is some sort of spiritual or awakening, some type of revolutionary thing happening in the black community? Because historically, African Americans have been kind of conservative and very loyal to the church. And so, do you think that there's something happening in the black community, given the historical backdrop of African Americans in America?
I do, and it seems to me, I mean, just looking at it from the outside in, that William Reverend Barber is leading the charge in that regard, although he's one of many. And there is a revival among the black evangelical movement, and I realize it takes many forms, to go back to core principles. Because the Bible was used by slaveholders and owners as a way, as a tool to keep people down. You know, slavery is spoken of well in the Bible. Jesus never talked about it, but Paul, said, slave owners, be nice to your slaves, and slaves, be obedient to your masters. I mean, that was quoted over and over again. Back to you. I'm sorry.
And do you think, because I'm a secularist, I'm a humanist, and I see this as a positive thing, because, you know, I think once the black community question is passed and question how we receive Christianity, you know, and once we become more secular and, you know, value each other just by the fact that we're all human, you know, because science says that, you know, we all have the same mitochondrial DNA from, you know, the same, you know, skeleton that they found. And right. So I think that, you know, the black community is starting, do you think that the black community is starting to become more secular? Because I think the black community has, you know, been behind when it comes to, you know, religion. Like, the black community has been consistently conservative, but it's growing out of that.
And Tarek, I not being black, I don't know, and I can't, I would not ever deign to speak for the black community, if there is even such a thing as that monolithic. But I can tell you that 50, 60 years ago, when some really good research came out indicating that the Celts and the Druids, the early Brits, were animists. They practiced nature religions. Suddenly, a whole bunch of white people started practicing nature religions. It became a big thing. And I'm waiting for the nature religions that were extant in Africa to start taking hold among the black community in the United States, because the nature religions are the ones that will save us. They are the ones who respect nature. And as opposed to, you know, the hierarchical, monolithic, monotheistic religions that don't respect nature. Tarek, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Charlie in Minnesota. Hey, Charlie, what's on your mind? Charlie? Oh, my. Charlie's online, too, Louise, if you want to. Oop, Charlie just dropped. Dawn in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Dawn, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Going back to the pharmaceutical discussion, mm-hmm. my husband and I do not have pharmaceutical insurance or prescription coverage, mm-hmm. and I use GoodRx. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's been a lifesaver for us. Mm-hmm. Basically, I go out and I put my journal.
Oh, Dawn just vanished. Dan in Chicago. Hey, Dan, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yes, Tom.
Hey.
Hi, Tom. I just finished a two-year course of a Tier 6 specialty drug. When I first started, it supposedly cost you $600 a month if you had to pay for it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
I just, when I finished, it was $3,241 charged to the insurance companies.
Amazing.
So because that was out of reach to the average patient, the doctors couldn't get anybody to agree to take it. So the drug companies offered a copay card that was preloaded annually with $9,000.
Right.
So... would cover your deductible.
Is this a drug that people would take over long periods of time? Is this their way of basically getting people hooked on their drug?
No, it's only, you can only take it for 2 years.
I see.
So the first year, the copay card paid for my deductible,
right.
and I never paid for a pen.
Right.
The second year, the drug companies decided no longer to allow the copay card to count towards your deductible. So they accepted it to pay for the pen, but they wouldn't count it towards your deductible.
Right.
So if you didn't do something, you would get your first three pens, and then you'd be stuck with your deductible.
Right.
So the insurance company got the $9,000 from the copay card, and then they got the patient to pay their deductible.
Amazing.
Now, I figured out a way around that, which maybe I won't go into on the air, but... there was a little trick that I did, and this became my...
But see, we shouldn't have to do little tricks, Dan. We should not have to do little tricks. And that's,
exactly.
I mean, your story, Shira's story, Sean's story, Louise's story. I mean, literally three out of the five people in the studio right now have in the last 2 weeks, had these kinds of problems with the pharmaceutical industry. This is insane. This has got to be one of the most common stories in America. James in Lakewood, Washington, listening on our Pacifica affiliate there, KBCS. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Robin Adamson out of the Salt Lake City Air Protectors
mm-hmm.
is going up against the investor class with the city of Salt Lake City for an inland port, and it smells a lot like Foxconn. And I told her about Wisconsin. And I told her to look into China as to the similarities and if she can, the investors in that.
Yeah.
And also, I've had intestinal tract infection with the entangled intestine, and it is not any fun. It is very serious.
Oh, it can kill you. James, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. David in Los Angeles. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. Been a little while since I've spoken with you, and I've just been totally busy mm-hmm. Working and trying to keep my head above water. But your topics,
David, we just have a minute. Let's get right to it, okay?
Okay. The bottom line to it all is, I'm curious as to what your take is on the social memory of people, being that, you know, me and you're about the same age. And I remember when the Congress in the dead of night was arm twisting and whatnot under the Bush administration to get all of these donut holes legislation passed. I remember that.
Yep.
Right? I remember Reagan and Clinton fighting with his compassion with so-called welfare reform and all these sort of things. And I mean, it's like, how is it for those who see reality and see how things are put in place and still
what? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the rest of your sentence. And still what?
How these things are manifested and how they're detrimentally affecting us.
Yeah. No, these are the topics that we need to be having conversations about, David, and it's why I'm bringing it up on this program, and I'm hoping to shame the corporate media into doing the same. David, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I seriously doubt, however, you will ever see a serious or meaningful conversation about this topic on network television that is taking hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising money from the drug companies. All aboard. It's a once-in-a-lifetime luxury Alaskan cruise on the Regent 7C Mariner, July 24th, 2019. For more information, Keen Luxury Travel, 800-856-1155. And did I mention, we'll be getting active on board with special events with yours truly, me, as we visit Ketchikan, Juneau, Skagway, Sitka, Hubbard Glacier, and Anchorage. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Jordan in Frankfort, Kentucky. Hey, Jordan. Thanks for listening to iHeartRadio. What's up?
Not a problem. How are you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I heard you make I just tuned in about 10 minutes ago to today's show, and I heard you make a statement that you and I think some of the people in the office there with you have been victims of the drug companies. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, sure.
I just take issue with that. I mean, if you want to make an issue about how much drug companies are making or, you know, sort of a Martin Scorsese type deal of price gouging, that's one thing. But claiming to be victims of the drug companies is basically making the claim that drug companies are obligated to provide the goods and services they do at a certain price. And
that's right.
Like
that's exactly the point I'm making, Jordan.
There, then you don't... So in your reality, drug companies have an obligation, one, to be in existence, and two, to provide their good or service at a specific price that comports with your estimation.
There, you didn't hear the setup for it. Let me go back and see if maybe we can come to a common ground on this, Jordan. You ever played Monopoly?
Of course.
Okay, you know, in Monopoly, you can make big money with high-end real estate, but if you hit a utility, what happens?
You got to pay.
No, you hit a utility and you get paid, but you get paid $100 a cycle, right? Instead of $2,400 Marvin Gardens. So it's boring, consistent, regular income. You know, if you own the utility or if you own a bank, you know, in Monopoly, you know you're going to make money. You're going to make a profit, right? It's a legitimate, serious business, but it is regulated in a way because they are essential to the well-being of the community and of the individuals in that community. They are regulated in ways that cause them to not be wild profit, wild west profit opportunities the way that the other things in Monopoly are. There are three buckets here, and we usually think only in terms of two buckets. The two buckets that we usually think of are the so-called free market and the so-called public spaces, right? You've got fire departments. I'm assuming you don't want your fire department to be run on a for-profit basis like they were in Chicago before the Chicago fire.
Sure. I'm good with fire departments being run by the government, yes.
Right, okay. And so there's no profit motive in the fire department, whereas there used to be, and they'd drive by your house and let it burn down if you didn't, you know, pay them in advance and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, okay,
sure.
So we're on track with the common public area. Then in the private area, people making computers, people making blue jeans, people making things where there's basically no regulation of the product, and therefore anybody can come into that marketplace and compete. Right? I could start a blue jeans company tomorrow with probably $10,000 or $20,000. I Michael Dell used to hang out on forums that I ran. I ran the PC forum on CompuSurf back in the 80s. Michael Dell used to hang out there and sell his computers online. Right? So, you know, I don't want the government making computers. I don't even want the government heavily regulating computers. There's no reason for it. Competition works. Are we in agreement on that?
So far, yes, but I think we're about to diverge.
Yeah, and that's this third category. And the third category is the middle area where we still think that private enterprise and the profit motive are useful in advancing new inventions and new products. And this, and in fact, you can read it in the Constitution. I mean, the founders thought, okay, there are certain things that we, subsidies essentially, that where the government is going to provide a subsidy to individual companies. And this is from Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. In other words, patents and copyrights. So sure. Here's an area where the government is specifically giving these drug companies, in the case of patented drugs, specifically giving them essentially a monopoly protection. In fact, in the era of Jefferson, he used to refer to these as monopolies. He was opposed to that even being in the Constitution because he didn't think that the government should be doing that. So we've got this third area where the cost of entry into the marketplace is very, very high. It's very difficult to get into the marketplace because the government has put a ring fence around you, has offered you, your company, a protection to keep competitors out. And it affects the public welfare, right? I don't think that the trademark on Mickey Mouse really has a consequential effect on my life. And, you know, you can say it's the useful arts and sciences, but it doesn't really have an impact on my life. But the trademark on the pharmaceuticals that I'm taking does. And so in that realm of pharmaceuticals, and I would add to that, by the way, hospitals. When I was growing up, I left Michigan in 1978, and I believe all these changes happened after I left, because we had a factory, we had 18 employees in Michigan, and I paid for the health insurance for every single one of them, and Blue Cross Blue Shield cost me $35 per person per month. Every hospital in Lansing, St. Luke's, and Ingham County, all three hospitals, they were owned by the Catholic Church or a nonprofit organization. Sparrow Catholic Church was the St. What's It, and the county owned one of the hospitals. You had to be, by law, a nonprofit corporation in Michigan to run a hospital until the 80s. And you had to be a nonprofit corporation to run a health insurance company. Blue Cross Blue Shield was nonprofit. So I'm saying that we need to go back to that kind of thinking and say that in these areas, and I'm not saying the pharmaceutical companies have to be nonprofit, but if they're going to get patent protection, if they're going to get FDA oversight, if they're going to get the exclusive ability to sell their drugs into the marketplace on a prescription, then they should be regulated to say, you guys, no problem if you want to make money. No problem if you want to pay your CEO $1 million a year and your senior executives $250,000 a year. No problem. Pay your stockholders a reasonable dividend. But when you start jacking the cost of drugs that cost you $20 and $30 a tablet to make, and you're selling for $500 a tablet, and you jack that up to $2,600 a tablet, which is what this guy bragged about doing in the Financial Times yesterday, just so that he could make a personal profit. That was the only reason. And he says this is a noble thing. Ayn Rand told us this. When you do that, you have stepped out of the boundaries, out of the bounds of acceptable commercial activity, in my opinion. Your turn, Jordan.
Well, I mean, maybe so, maybe not, because one thing these companies have to do in order to make that profit, a certain tablet or what have you may only take $20 or $30 or 20 or 30 cents a piece to make, but we don't see all the R&D that had to go into harvesting that drug.
The drug I'm talking about was developed in the 1920s. It's been off patent since the 1950s.
Okay, I don't know. I didn't read the article, and I didn't hear you talking about it earlier, so I don't know about that specifically.
It's the same thing with the EpiPens. You know, Heather Bresch, if that was her name, as I recall, Joe Manchin's daughter, who is the CEO of the company that makes the EpiPens, and they took the price. The EpiPens have a drug in them that was invented in the late 1900s. 1800s. In the 1890s, they developed epinephrine or penicillin or whatever, however you say that drug. This has been out of patent. This is, I don't think it was ever in patent. And so you've got a thing that is essential to the life of children. One of my kids, got a bee sting and went into anaphylactic shock. She had to carry an EpiPen for the rest of her life. And back then, we were buying these EpiPens for $5 and $10 a piece, as I recall. They were cheap. And now they're $600 a piece. Why? Because they can get it. How is that a good thing for anybody other than Heather Bresch?
Well, it seems that your issue that you're speaking to now is how long are we going to allow patents, the duration of patents to go? I think
that's just a piece. But see, there's no patent in there. This drug is not patented.
Well, what is preventing, in that case, then other companies from coming in and do it? There's got to be
the way the marketplace is constructed. The pharmaceutical marketplace is constructed in a way that promotes monopoly. You've got these pharmacy managers who are between the drug companies and the pharmacies, and they're between the drug companies and the hospitals. And all the drugs go through these pharmacy managers, and they decide which companies have entry into the marketplace and which ones don't. And so it's very, plus you've got, FDA regulation, plus you've got the cost of compliance with all those regulations. Making drugs is a real high-end thing. You've got to, it's got to be high-quality stuff. And by the way, I would add, most of the drugs that we consume in the United States are manufactured in India or China. But, setting that aside and imported for pennies and sold to us for lots and lots of dollars. But the bottom line is that if we're talking about something that impacts not just the quality of my life and your life, Jordan, but literally our ability to survive. If you've got that, that person should not, the company running that company should not have the ability to do this. Rex Trekking just tweeted to me, Tom, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield personal choice through work. I take one pill a night. I pay $60 a month for 30 pills. Without insurance, those same 30 pills are $3,200. So without this insurance from my employer, I die. So I am literally tied to my job. I only make $36,000 a year. And if I didn't have the insurance, the medication I take would cost me more than what I earn. How is that right in the United States of America, Jordan?
With all due respect to him, if I don't keep my job, I die. Like
how is that right? How is that right? We're the only developed country in the world where if you lose your health insurance, you can die or go bankrupt. Literally the only one. 600,000 people a year in America go bankrupt because they got sick. In Canada, you know how many people go bankrupt because they got sick? Zero. Zero.
How many new drugs like this are developed in Canada every year versus the United States?
I have not once talked about a new drug, Jordan, in any of this context, number one. And number two, look up who pays for the new drugs. The majority, and I'm talking well over half the cost of new drugs, is paid for by you and me with our tax dollars through the National Institutes of Health that fund research at universities, who then essentially give these drugs to pharmaceutical companies. Jordan, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's past the hour. We're going to check in with Talk Media News right after this break. We'll be back in 4 minutes with them. Stick around. Linda watching Free Speech TV in, we've got to get our gain levels up here. Linda watching Free Speech TV in Coconut Creek, Florida. Hey, Linda, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Hey. I missed you yesterday because, like I was telling, Louise, we don't get you the first hour on the East Coast anymore. We don't know why on Sirius XM, but I guess that's just their choice. I'm going to ramp up more of my donation to other places to you.
Thank you. What's up?
What I wanted to they're running some very vicious ads against the Democrat that's,
Bill Nelson?
Bill Nelson. I mean, these things are very vicious. And we know that a part of Florida was gerrymandered. And is there any way that, next time you talk to Greg Palast, are they keeping an eye on Florida? Because I truly believe this is just me. My husband believes it too. We think it's going to go Republican. I just don't see Nelson keeping a seat, and I see Rick Scott, taking that, and I just don't see they're going to throw everything at the wall as far as for this Andrew. And I'm going to vote for him. I'm a Democrat. I love his politics. I love that he's progressive. But I'm sorry, it's not going to happen in Florida, and I think it's going to be because they steal it.
I think if they do win, it'll be because they stole it, like in 2000, where Jeb Bush had to knock 80,000-90,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in order to get the vote close enough that his brother could take it to the Supreme Court. I don't know the situation in detail in Florida. I do know that Greg Palast has been trying to get the Florida cross checklists. I don't know if he has succeeded or not. He's going to be on the program either later this week or early next week to be, you know, keeping us up to date on these things. But, yeah, I mean, you know, and on top of this, you've got the guy who stole so much money from Medicare that when they discovered the fraud, they fined his company $1.6 billion, largest fine for Medicare fraud, the largest Medicare fraud in the history of the United States. That was Rick Scott, the company that he owned, and he was the CEO of. That committed this fraud, and now that same Rick Scott is running ads in the Florida market saying that he's going to protect Medicare and that the Democrats want to harm Medicare with Medicare for All proposals.
I guess what else you didn't know about?
What's that?
Remember when he turned down that $8 billion for that speed rail in South Florida?
Right.
He gave it to Detroit. He gave that money to Detroit. Now he owns part of that speed rail, okay, and he wants it built with his money and all his, what do you call that, stockholders.
Right.
They want to control that speed rail.
You're talking high-speed rail in Detroit?
No, in Florida.
In Florida?
Yeah, it's called the Bright Star. And he's got all this money invested into it with all these, you know, all his other rich buddies, so that they can control the lines, they can control the money, they can control where it's going to go. You don't find that a little strange?
I find it extremely corrupt.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, if you're accurately characterizing it. Yeah, if you're accurately characterizing it, that sounds to me like, you know, well, I mean, again, the guy supervised or was the CEO of the company that engaged in the largest Medicare fraud in the history of the United States. And it shouldn't surprise us that he's a grifter. Rick Scott is absolutely a grifter, right? You know, in the mold of Donald Trump. Linda, thank you for the call. I wish you the best in Florida there, and I hope that you can get all your friends to turn out to vote. We're going to check in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News in just a moment. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. There we go. Let's check in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. Ellen, this report, by the way, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. Ellen, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much. Listen, let me tell you something. The president just gave an order that basically says he's going to sanction any country that has interfered with the elections. Hello? And believe it or not, the White House is now saying this has nothing to do with anything in the past. This is just totally new. Give me a break.
Well, that could be their way of saying we're going to prosecute things going forward, but we're not going to prosecute people. You know, we're not going to prosecute any country that messed with our elections in 2016 since I'm president.
Well, that's true. We're not sure what it means. And, of course, we would have to ask Sarah Huckabee Sanders. But it's, we'll see what she says if she says anything this afternoon.
Yeah.
Also, the United Nations called it a humanitarian nightmare. This is the province Idlib in Syria. They say that there's starvation, there's lack of medical care, all this kind of thing that is going on right now. So that is happening as we speak. Also, it looks, even though it's not much money, it's under $10,000, it's $9,755,000, was taken from the FEMA budget, and it was taken for to put people in prison for longer periods of time, particularly kids in prison. And now, of course, the FEMA budget was supposed to help with any kind of hurricane.
Right.
And it's not much money. Again, it's under $10,000.
No, $10 million.
Still,
$10 million. It's under $10 million.
$10 million.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm reading the numbers wrong.
Yeah, it's under $10 million. But you're right. And you know, FEMA's saying, well, this didn't come out directly out of our disaster budget. It just came out of our general budget, right? But their
budget is supposed to be to help us with disasters.
That's right. And apparently the amount of money that's going into these private for-profit corporations that are building prisons now for children, for immigrant children, is over $100 million. FEMA is just one of the many agencies that they're stealing money from.
Right. Well, pardon my dyslexia for getting the numbers wrong.
Okay.
So there was a primary in New Hampshire yesterday, and Sununu's son, of course, is probably going to be governor. He's going against a woman Democrat. Also, we know Bernie Sanders' son did not do well in his congressional bid. However, a guy by the name of Chris Pappas might be the first openly gay member of Congress from New Hampshire.
Cool.
Now, New York was supposed to have its primary, but of course, because of the Rosh Hashanah Jewish holiday, it put it off till tomorrow, and Rhode Island is today.
Interesting. Now, tomorrow in New York, this is the Cynthia Nixon, Andrew Cuomo thing, right? Not Andrew. What's
right. It's and also in terms of the Attorney General, we have the woman who wrote that book about corruption. And
Zephyr Teachout, yeah.
That's right. And so she is going up against an openly gay guy. It's going to be a very interesting primary, to say the least.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I vote New York.
Okay.
So there you have it.
Good.
Okay. The EPA is going after vaping companies for minor sales. They say that they are making the vapes in a way that they're tasty, and they're going after 1,300 retailers on that.
This is by minor sales. You mean sales to minors, but the vaping
sales
industry
minors,
trying
right.
to yeah tobacco. Excuse me, nicotine is 5 times more addictive than heroin, and that substance is being promoted to children, is what they're saying.
That's exactly what they're saying, and they said they're going to go after 1,300 retailers.
Wow.
Couldn't be too soon, in my view.
Yep.
I used to work in addictions. Okay. The New York Times defended its actions on its op-ed. They said that they had promised the person that they would remain confidential who gave them the op-ed. They know who it is, and it's within their First Amendment rights.
All true.
So they're,
what's Trump trying to do about it? I know he wanted the FBI to investigate.
Trump wants to find out who did it.
Yeah, but what is their, I mean, whoever said it didn't commit a crime. I mean, you could argue that they're committing a crime against democracy by staging a coup, but I don't think there's a crime there.
No, no crime at all so far. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the Vatican decided to hold a conference on sexual abuse, but they're not holding it till February, if you can believe it. I don't know why they just can't do it right away.
I would think that they would want to get this over with and behind them.
Right.
You would
exactly.
think. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, the mayor of L.A., who is, by the way, running for president, we think. I mean, he hasn't declared, but we think.
Are you talking Garcetti? No, who's?
I'm talking about Garcetti.
Yeah, okay.
That's exactly correct.
Couldn't remember if he was still mayor.
He is Jewish and Mexican,
mm-hmm.
and he spoke in Cleveland, Ohio yesterday.
Oh, interesting. Well, Gil Garcetti has a good reputation. I mean, you know, it's broadly speaking, although the L.A. Police Department doesn't, you know, has a few problems, but.
Well, of
course.
We'll
see where this goes.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting. He's clearly speaking in Jewish communities where he can get some traction.
Good. Good.
Okay.
We need more good, strong Democrats.
It's very interesting, but as you know, that Donald Trump has these rallies. He talks about the economy being the best ever. Well, that's just not true. Unemployment rate being the best ever, not true. The Washington Times has gone through each of his discussions rated some as true and some as not true. But a lot of what they rated, they said something like over 60% is not true.
Wow. Yeah, the liar in chief. It's breathtaking. Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen's new book, Loving What You Do. Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's always great hearing your voice. I love talking with you. We'll be back. Jeff Berkley is going to be with us in a little bit. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.